Bonjour, and welcome to the Amateur Detective Club. This club is exactly how it sounds. A bunch of amateurs talking about their favorite mysteries. So if you encounter a real mystery or a murder, contact the proper authorities. Do not come to us. We do not know what we are doing. But enjoy the program. Allons-y. Let us begin.
I now call in this meeting of the Amateur Detective Club to order. My name is Tristan Miller, the Saucy Sleuth.
I'm Melissa Maley, the Spy.
I'm Tyler Riley, Cop and a Half.
Today's show, why it's brought to you by Audible. Audible's offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. You can just go to audibletrial.com/HDCpod. And browse the unmatched collections of audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It is that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/HDCpod. I want to thank Daniel Craig's character from Knives Out for coming in and doing that reading.
I see. Okay. Well, he just puts an H in front of every word.
Yeah, you've never heard a Southerner go, what? Like from Arkansas or Louisiana?
Oh, okay. I mean, not to that extent, I guess.
Sometimes one might do an accent and exaggerate it for comic effect.
Oh, is that how that works?
Sometimes, yeah.
Is that how comedy works?
So, before we hit record, Melissa, Tyler, and I were all talking about how I've decided to mutilate my body and run a 5K in August.
Mm-hmm. The best time to start running,
yeah.
The summer.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, it's summer vacation. One must have a hobby. Mustn't one?
Sure. Yes.
So Melissa and I are both very competitive, and Melissa's been running for 2 years, and me being the arrogant bastard that I am, I'm like, how can I win against Melissa? Which is a foolish endeavor, I think, in general, but also specifically, I just want to be your first record. I just want to be better than you when you were starting. Does that make sense?
Yes, and that is completely understandable, and I would not begrudge you that, especially, really me? Really, self?
Especially?
Especially because I started running after I had cancer for a year and couldn't exercise at all. So, yeah, I would not begrudge you that.
Yeah, whereas me, I'm just lazy. That's my handicap, is that I'm very lazy, you see.
I mean, yeah, there's a difference between, but you like do some physical activity, and I did like walk around a lot when I was in treatment, but you know, it weakened me significantly when I was sick. So,
yes.
So yeah. Yeah. I mean, I came from being quite ill for almost a year, and you'll come from a better place. You're also a little younger than me.
Un poquito. I'm never revealing my age again. Have I told you this?
Oh.
I'm starting to lie about my age because my driving instructor thought I was 19. So I'm like, okay, maybe I am.
Right. I mean, why do you think I won't tell anybody my age?
Yeah, exactly.
Because everyone thinks I'm younger than I am.
Mm-hmm. So
I'm
that's
happily 57 years old.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. Oh, Tyler. Well, that's mostly to do with your attitude, not your looks.
Is that because I'm black on a Juneteenth of all days, Tristan?
No, because you have a youthful glow about you, but you also are grumpy like an old man. It's very similar
youthful.
To myself. Anyhow, so Melissa's here with me in the studio, quote unquote studio, my
yes.
apartment. My studio apartment.
Studio apartment,
there
yeah,
it is.
To be fair.
Yeah, the whole thing's a kitchen, when you think about it.
Way to be.
Yeah. Ugh. Sometimes I'll be like, I just want a room for my bed. A bedroom, if you will. Shit.
Could have had it all.
Yeah.
But.
And then also, like, I keep coming up with what I think are new ideas, like a bedroom. And I'm like, that's been around for a while. And then I was, like, making a smoothie, and I put coffee in it and vanilla. I was like, oh, people should do... it's a McFlurry, isn't it? It's just a McFlurry.
But with coffee.
Yeah, or, like, a McCafe, whatever bogus thing. Anyway, but Tyler is not here. He is at what is, based off of his background on Zoom, is that the...
A loft, it a looks loft. Like. A loft in, what, the village, maybe? Like,
I'm aloof in a loft.
You're aloof in a loft. So if there's any delays or weirdness audio-wise on our end, it's because... we're not all here. Eventually, we will be again together.
I mean, were we August ever really all here?
Yeah, not really. Today, we're talking about Agatha Christie's Poirot, Season 11, Episode 3, The Third Girl.
It's actually just called Third Girl.
Oh,
no, the.
Actually, it is Close Encounters of the Third Girl.
Yeah, that's what I would like, if you know what I mean.
Oh.
Yeah, I do know, because they explain in this episode that a third girl means the third person to take on the lease in an apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, we get this explanation from one Ariadne Oliver, played by Zoe Wanamaker.
Yeah.
And Poirot was like, the third girl? Yes, the third girl. The third girl that takes on the lease.
That is such a nice... Poirot not being English is such a nice way to explain English idioms to international audiences. Mm. I think it's a very clever built-in thing.
I also love how Ariadne Oliver explains everything, because it's just like, oh, I don't have time for this.
Yeah.
But, right. Yes, of course. Let me just get this out.
Yep.
The third girl, of course. Ah, everyone knows.
It's like she constantly is receiving a phone call.
Yeah.
And she has to pick it up, but she also has to.
She's very white rabbit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's not in a disparaging way. It's just like, I'm busy.
Yeah. She's thinking about a million other things all the time.
Yeah.
Relatable.
It's so good. It's so good. I mean, I do miss, because we don't have Inspector Japp or Miss Lemon or even Hastings, but getting Ariadne Oliver in these episodes has been great.
Who do we prefer? I know it's like picking children, but you can do it. Sophie did it, and so can you.
Sorry, what was the question?
Who do we prefer, Japp, Hastings, or Ariadne?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, isn't it? It's a bit tricky, isn't it?
Japp for me.
Okay.
I mean, recency bias, probably, but I really love me some Ariadne Oliver.
Yeah, I do as well. I think it's a close between Japp and Ariadne.
Yeah. So,
rip to our man Hastings, sorry. You just immediately got knocked off the bracket.
Love Hugh Fraser, but...
Yeah, we love Hugh Fraser.
Friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod. Brief friend of the pod.
Brief friend of the pod.
Then he stopped using Twitter, which is correct.
Yeah,
if better. I could, I would.
Yeah.
But I think Japp as well, just because of the repartee they have, and then also like it's nice to have someone second guessing Poirot. I think that dynamic's fun, and also he's so the class dynamic between he and Poirot is quite good.
Oh yeah.
Whereas there are several moments in this episode I was like, oh, these are two rich celebrities solving crimes, aren't they?
That is fair.
Very like, ooh, we're going to parties, ooh.
Yeah, but I love...
That is a series I would watch.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just for the two sure.
Of but them, like, it's Josh out. Hartnett and like Sean William Scott, and they're idiots.
Ideal.
Amazing. So... Poirot is hanging out in his office with his new butler, which makes me understand, what's that racist movie we just watched?
Murder by Death.
Murder by Death.
Birth of a Nation?
Murder by Death, when the Poirot character had the butler, I was like, who's this now? And it's like, oh, right. Okay. He does get a butler.
George. Yeah.
But yeah. So hanging out with his butler.
Who I do not like.
I know you don't. I don't
like him at all.
I have a soft spot for him. Sad to say. I mean, I miss Miss Lemon. But I do enjoy George. because Poirot does treat him with such kindness, and I like that dynamic. Again, I'm all for class, you know, sure. mobility.
Yeah, okay.
And like that dynamic, but I understand he's pretty bland.
I understand he's pretty bland. Okay.
This also like something someone would say about like, oh, you're about to meet George. Ah, yes, I understand he's pretty bland as a person.
Yes, quite.
Can I tell you?
Okay.
Brief story. I went to a therapist once. I know, brag. I went to a therapist and I had just seen a psychiatrist, and my therapist asked, how did I find my psychiatrist? And I was like, she was rather cold and not understanding. And he goes, no. What service did you use to make an appointment?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh.
But related to that, that is also how I have found the psychiatrists I've been to.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I'm like, hi, yes. I do talk therapy with someone who is kind. Can you please give me some medication? Yeah. And they're like, yeah, sounds about right.
I call my guy for 2 minutes, then it's done. And then I love that. I don't need to be your friend.
Right. I'm very anxious. Can you please give me some Lexapro? Thank you. They're like, oh, yeah, you are.
So I don't want that Lexi amateur, I know that.
I was thinking it, thank you so much.
No, exactly.
Even exactly. When we're not all here, we're still the same wavelength. You love to see it, folks.
Yes, so Georges introduces a young woman, and...
Oh, but wait, we see the first image we see... Poirot wrote a book.
He did. And it does not come up again in the rest of the episode, but he did write a book.
Nope.
I wish it would have come up again.
Yeah.
But
maybe
famed
later.
Author Ariadne Oliver and Hercule Poirot, two authors hanging out.
Solving crimes. Yes. And it's a beautiful shot, actually. He's got some really nice orange furniture or whatever, like accents in his home. It's very bright and cheerful. Anyway, so Georges says there's a young woman outside and she wants to see him, and Poirot's like, why?
And he goes, I don't take visitors at this hour, you know this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mood.
But he might, you know, she says she might have committed a murder.
And he goes, might have?
Yeah.
We're all very like,
yeah. Gotta love it. Poirot is like, okay, I have set this time aside for self-care. And then he's like, oh gosh, this is way too interesting though. I don't understand what this means. I do have to let this woman in so I can figure out how she might have committed a murder. This is very confusing and I need to know what's up.
If only. I long for this. I long for a strange woman to show up to my apartment and be like, I might have killed someone. Can you help me? And I'm like, yes. Immediately, I'm fully on board with Poirot in this one.
Sure. So she walks in. She looks upset, as she does for most of the episode, which much is made of that because she's had a go of it in her life, I'd say. She doesn't smile much. It's a thing. So, yes, she looks very, very upset, though, because she says that she's looking for Poirot, and he says, it's me. And she's like, aren't you old, though? And
he
says, I guess.
Not aren't you old, too old. She looks at him like, you're too old.
Yes.
Point of order, one step more.
Yes. Mm.
She looks at him, sobs hysterically, and says... You're too old.
Which is why I will never stop moisturizing.
Right? It's a good argument for that. Yes. And he says, but what has happened? Please tell me about this murder that you think you did. And she says, no, you're too old. I gotta go.
Yeah, and then she dips. I wanted to say one more thing about this opening scene. We do get a beautiful rendition of the theme song. Mm. And it made me so happy, like in a way that I wasn't expecting, just to hear the da 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 da, da. And I was like, I like clap my hands like a kid for ice cream.
Yeah.
It made me very happy.
We love the theme.
Could but you imagine said... like a Mr. Softy playing the Poirot theme?
please let this be a thing.
Okay.
I heard it playing like Sound of Music the other day, and I was really weirded out.
That is strange.
I recently obtained a keyboard, which I can use to play music on the computer and record it, and I will try to do a Mr. Softy version of the Poirot theme.
That sounds like a good use of your time.
Listen, I get anxious at 2 a.m.
I understand.
My neighbors hate me.
I mean, I was not being sarcastic. It just sounded like I was being sarcastic.
That's fair.
It does sound like a good use of your time.
Yeah.
I like it. I like this idea. But it was mentioned that the young woman was referred by Ariadne Oliver. So Poirot goes to see her and says, what in the heck happened? So she recounts this story where she had been trying to work, but the girls upstairs were having a party. So she decided instead to go to the party.
Mm-hmm. Which, beautiful. God bless. You can tell when the party is bumping.
I might as well have a cocktail.
Honestly.
Yeah.
What a life. Yeah. What a life to have that confidence. Just to be like, fuck it.
Yeah. So she goes upstairs and hangs out. And she explains that, she hangs out at the party.
They're all smoking reefer. It's chill. they vibing, as the youths say.
Yeah. And she introduces Poirot to the setup of the apartment. There's this blonde girl who was the original person who got the flat. So she gets the biggest room. And then the second girl, who's, gets the second biggest room and pays a little bit less. And then they eventually, of course, find the third girl.
The titular.
Third girl. And, she's the one who takes the smallest room. Great. Mm-hmm. We understand that. We live in New York.
Exactly. I've been the third girl a fair amount.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not yet. One more week.
Yeah. I have been the... So somehow, I moved into an apartment with a friend. Well, I actually didn't know her, but she is now a friend.
Brag.
I know. A roommate turned friend. As opposed to a friend turned roommate.
I'm going to be honest. I've only had the...
So I somehow ended up with the biggest room in that apartment. And she kept the smaller room. Even though I was the second girl, technically.
I mean, if you're already set up and you don't want to move your garbage around. And also, like...
Yeah.
Were you paying more?
No.
Well, then she played herself.
It's all right. Was I paying? No. The rent was pretty good, though.
Yeah.
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 The landlord, terrible. Absolutely awful. But...
There you go.
Big, cheap apartment.
Landlord, is he terrible?
Aren't they all? Mm. Your landlord needs you. You don't need your landlord.
I mean, this was another time before, I had a better idea how to stand up for myself. So...
Ariadne goes to this party. There's the three girls, and then also this...
She calls him the peacock.
The peacock, because he's peacocking all over the place. He's a painter. But then again, no.
David Brusker or something?
Baker? Yeah, David Baker.
I hardly know her.
And he is a familiar face. I've seen him in something. I know he was in Watchmen, but I haven't seen Watchmen yet. I know I need to.
I really do. But he's dancing with second girl, whose name is...
Who knows? We're going to call them first girl, second girl, and third girl.
That's perfect. Second girl,
I thought it was Frances, no?
Yes, it is Frances.
You're absolutely right.
Oscar winner Frances McDormand.
We keep talking about Frances McDormand.
The only Frances I know, Ford Coppola. Frances Ford Coppola is dancing with Peacock... But can't keep his eyes off of third girl.
And she smiles. Yeah, they smile at each other.
They smile and they look across the room and it's very cute and blah, blah, blah.
He's pretty cute.
Okay. I accept.
He has floppy hair.
He do have that floppy hair.
Good eyes.
He has an acceptable face.
I accept it. I do not deny his face. Do you not deny his face in all his ways? she's explaining that, but then does the police person show up about the murder, the actual murder?
Hold on just a second. Sorry. I got excited because Tom Misson, who plays David Baker, was in Lost in Austin, which I have not yet watched, but I actually am borrowing a friend's copy for the past 5 years. And truly, I have had this DVD in my apartment for a very long time.
That's how long it's been. It's a DVD.
Mm-hmm. And she was in... she was in the Black Dahlia movie, which of course I watched because
yes,
have you met me? And
no, who are you? Get out.
She was also in Lost in Austin. Ooh. So they were in Lost in Austin together. Lost in Austin.
Yes.
It's fun to say. Lost in Austin.
Okay. Now, is Austin the place or a man? It or is a woman?
A woman.
Okay.
Jane Austin.
Oh.
She wrote a few books that... I'm a big fan of because, again, of course I am.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I hope that people listening to this podcast will, you know, hear this unknown author and her work. And hopefully we can. Hopefully something will happen. Hopefully the sales will pick up.
Right.
Austin, she wrote those books kind of like Bridget Jones's Diary, right?
Yes.
Okay. Because I've seen Bridget Jones's Diary, but no, I've seen the long version of Pride and Prejudice more than one time.
With Colin Firth?
Yes.
Yeah,
and then and Sense and Sensibility with Alan Rickman as well.
Mm, yeah.
Yes.
I've seen both of those. My mother loves Jane Austen and had control over the TV, obviously, growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to watch Star Wars Episode II Attack of the Clones again, and she was like, no.
One of my friends... the one who loaned me this DVD that I have to return. She's listened to the pod a couple times. Hi, Laura, if you're listening. I will return your DVD someday.
It's never happened.
She had a wedding where I was a bridesmaid, and instead of carrying bouquets, we had a paper flower and a copy of a Jane Austen book.
I thought you were going to say copies of this same DVD. And instead of the flower girl, it's just winging digital video discs into the crowd.
But it was pretty cool because I still have my my copy of Persuasion.
So oh, very was, nice.
Yeah.
So anyway, does the murder happen?
So she's, there's been a murder. Someone has died. In fact, the police officer inspector comes in and says it looks like a suicide. Because it was a lady found in a bathtub with her wrists cut.
No gun in her left hand, though.
So, yes, we find out that this woman is Third Girl's former nanny, Nanny Seagram. And she found Nanny Seagram in the bath and... you know, saw lots of blood and had a knife and was very upset. And that is when she assumed that she committed this murder, basically.
And it should also be noted that this woman has had mental health issues her entire life. So in her mind, she has essentially already done the work of gaslighting herself into believing that she is a murderer.
Yeah. We find out in pretty quick succession that she she found her mother in the same way.
Yes.
Her mother had committed suicide by cutting her wrists in the bathtub.
Yeah.
Died by suicide, I should say. Yeah.
So if you're intent on watching this episode as well, there's a few depictions of this exact thing. And it's pretty tastefully done, but it is there. So please... you know, tread lightly if that's something that you might get upset by.
Yeah, absolutely. I should have warned before I started talking about it. Pardon me. But yes, so the inspector does come in and say, I don't know what she's talking about. You know, Nanny Seagram clearly died by suicide. This is a pretty clear case. Or the coroner or somebody says that.
If only Jap was here to be like, it's a pretty cut and dry case, isn't it, Poirot?
I know. Yeah.
I do miss Jap a lot.
Yeah. No, that's true. Definitely.
Oh, if only that spinoff had gotten picked up.
Could you imagine if I wrote a whole pilot and then just like sent it to Philip Jackson and be like, please?
Yes, I can imagine it.
Please just do this one for me. It doesn't even, it just needs to be a sketch. It doesn't need to be a full show.
You proposed it and now I want it.
I can probably find his representation on IMDb Pro. That's a hack for all you aspiring performers. If you get IMDb Pro, you can go to, like, for example, Tom Hiddleston's page and just find his agent and email them. You can just do that.
What would I say to Tom Hiddleston's agent?
Please hire me. That's what I've done.
Oh, I see.
That's what I've done.
Me loving Tom Hiddleston being like, that wouldn't really help me.
No.
In any way.
It's very funny, though. Some people, they're very elusive. Like David Lynch, the contact just links back to his foundation. And he's like, I can tell my man wants to be left alone. I get it. There's, people who like Twin Peaks are weirdos. Anyhow, so it appears that she's died by suicide, but yet third girl's still convinced. And since Poirot feels obligated to help this young woman because she did ask for it, he begins his investigation with Ariadne's help.
Yes.
And so he goes to her nuncle.
Yeah.
Roderick?
Bean
Dad? Bean Dad is in this episode.
Resterick.
Resterick, okay.
Andrew Resterick.
Andrew, okay, so it's not, that's
oh, sorry, father. That's the father? It's, what's his, what's the uncle's name? I forget.
I don't know.
Okay.
Roderick.
But, hmm? I'm sorry, Tyler, could you?
Roderick.
Roderick, it is Roderick. Bean Dad is here. Blind Bean Dad, he's an older man who is blind, who has a secretary who's clearly helping him out in more than one way.
Sonia,
thank you. And Poirot shows up and says some malarkey about them both serving in the war, and he is going through old photos. And also on his way in, Poirot bumps into the peacock, and he says, never even, do you know anything about third girl's father? He goes, never even met the man, but he's quite angry at this person, because it comes out that third girl, her father left when she was quite young, and this presumably drove her mother into a depression, which led to her suicide. And then Poirot is speaking with her nuncle, and he, I don't know, like they're just talking about photographs, and he's like, I don't need them. Take as much as you want, because I'm blind.
Yeah.
And is that all the information that comes from this scene? Because I know there's more later on.
Yeah.
And then he goes to...
Well, meanwhile... Well,
Sonia is suspicious of Poirot.
Yes.
And, you know, addresses that with Sir Roderick. And he says, you know, I don't believe him at all. Like, I didn't give him any information. I didn't give much up because he's obviously lied about this acquaintance. Because this acquaintance is dead.
Yeah.
And Poirot let it slip like that. Oh, yes, I speak to so-and-so from time to time. Captain Abercrombie, I believe it was. Not realizing that Abercrombie had passed away a year prior.
When you were growing up, at what yardage could you smell the Abercrombie and Fitch in the mall?
Oh, about... What, 100 yards, more or less?
I thought it was the Hollister that smelled.
Okay.
It's both, for sure.
Okay. I was, like, at least 7 car lengths away, and I would be able to get a whiff of that Axe body spray. Impenetrable. It was like a fog. Someone had a fogger. Just
fogger, that game where you have to get across that road?
Yeah, that's correct. You need to get a wisp of smoke across the highway.
And I get hit by a car.
It's just the frog from Frogger taking a big ol' hit from a joint and then Oh, that was fun.
Oh, I see. So, yes. Okay. The uncle is named Sir Roderick Horsfield, and the dad is named Resterick.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Andrew, that's confusing. Yeah.
Rule number one of writing is don't name two characters with the same letter. This is actually like a thing specifically in screenplays because people will just like get confused because they're dumb. Because most people are just can't comprehend it, myself included. Whereas I think it's fun to name people like Timmy and Tommy, but it's confusing.
Yes. So Ariadne Oliver also goes and chats with first girl and second girl. She says...
Third girl, huh?
She says that third girl, Norma, is her real name. Third girl has was talking to her about a book. And she's like, oh, yeah, that's right. You were here last night, I guess.
Yeah.
We don't want to read any, you know, we don't want to buy your book. And she's like, no, I'm just dropping this off for her. And they invite her in for, begrudgingly invite her in for a cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
And she's amazing. She tries to get some information out of them. She finds out that first girl works for Norma's dad.
Yes.
And she had been friends with second girl. Is that right? Is that how she found? Yeah. So first girl gets the apartment. Second girl moves in, and then Norma moves in as third girl because first girl's working for the dad. Great.
Yep.
Every night and day.
Yeah.
Rolling.
They both thought everyone thinks that Daphne is a little off, a little weird, you know, mental health stigma and all of that.
Daphne?
Norma. There is someone named Daphne in this. I don't know why.
Yeah, but Norma is the third
girl. Yeah.
Oh, third Daphne girl, Norma.
Yeah. Daphne is the waitress that's in one scene. I don't know why I keep
that's beautiful
confusing it with Norma.
And then Poirot goes to see the papa.
Yes. And it becomes clear that he and first girl are. Yeah. Exactly.
Bird watching?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're bird watching. Active birders, if you can believe it. They love to look at an osprey, perhaps a spotted tit.
Yeah.
Is that why the spread watching. Eagle was...
Sorry, go ahead, Tyler. I'm sorry.
What?
Just like the idea of bird watchers going and just looking at like livestock, like turkeys and chickens out of somebody's farm. Just like, yeah, that's a hen, all right. Over stupid.
Yeah. So, Dad had showed back up after Norma. Norma, yes, right. I got it.
Norma is his daughter.
Yeah. Had gone through school and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. He's been in South Africa. He's been seen in South Africa for the last two, three years as well. And he's just arrived back in England.
Yeah.
And his business is not doing well.
Right. Exactly. So we do find out that she went to a boarding school. Is this when we found this out?
Yes.
After her mother had passed and Miss Seagram was taking care of her.
Yes, because her governess was a governess for a bit and then promptly quit and then started her own school.
Right. And Poirot does go meet with her.
Yes.
Miss Battersby. And she talks about her very, very, very fondly.
Mm-hmm.
And Poirot asks her, you know, do you ever remember her smiling?
And Ariadne is there.
Yeah.
And she interrupts Poirot, much as I just did to you.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, perhaps what he means is, did she seem a bit daft the whole life? Like, she was very rude about it. It's like, did she seem bonkers?
But she, you know, Miss Battersby says, well, you know, she was very... very forlorn. I mean, considering what happened with her family, that's completely understandable. So, she also, Poirot says, like, oh, did you ever have any children? And she's like, well, I've never been married. And Poirot's like, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But did you have any children?
He goes, of course,
right, of course, Miss Battersby. Oh, yeah. But, you know, you can tell that he's, you know, the wheels in his head are turning about what that meant.
And it also comes out that Norma had, like, a shrine to her mother, like, with all these photos and this sort of thing. And he goes, no shrine for her father? No, because her mother destroyed all the photographs.
Oh, yeah.
Just like that Green Day song after her father left and her mother destroyed all evidence of her father, including a very nice portrait, which is what Baker is working on.
Right. So Baker was at the house because he was having a portrait restored of Dad.
Yes.
Of Andrew. Because, yeah, Mom had broken that to some shreds.
Mm-hmm. And then,
which is so dramatic and amazing. Yeah. Like the image of the portrait, like, just torn. The, you know, it's a canvas, so it's just torn up. Heck yeah.
We've lost something in the digital age, because the equivalent is like going onto your iPhone and deleting photos of your ex. Or like removing it from Instagram. There's something.
No.
No?
You have to take down the cloud.
Oh. The entire cloud.
The entire cloud. This just all in, the internet has completely dissipated due to one begruntled ex. Begruntled is not a real
begruntled
word.
Begruntled ex, yes. Is begruntled the opposite of disgruntled?
Well, he begruntled, he begruntled, not.
Because, well, what's gruntled?
To grunt all is to grumble, I believe.
Sure, okay.
English is terrible.
Disgruntled.
Disgruntled. That gruntled.
It implies the existence of being gruntled.
To gruntle.
It actually.
Ugh. Anyway, so Miss Battersby is also a huge fan of Ariadne and asks her to sign this just entire stack of all of her books. And she's like, oh, very well.
Is that right?
And during this time, Miss Battersby releases some very important information that I can't recall, and I'm hoping one of you two can.
Yeah. Poirot asked about why her time as Norma's tutor was so short. And she said, oh, I left to start this school.
Mm-hmm.
Implying that, you know, she came into some, you know, fund at some point around that time, left, and whatever. But as they're leaving the school, we see that the school was founded in 1919.
Mm-hmm. So the dates don't match up. There'd be
a
2-year gap between the two things. But, oh, the thing that she's revealing while she's signing is that Norma, very important here, Norma is set to inherit everything from her father. From her mother when she turns 25, as is the custom of the time.
Yeah.
So she will receive millions of dollars, or pounds rather, and then also the estate on which her uncle and father live.
Right.
So,
Ariadne also goes to follow.
May I?
Yes.
There's one more bit with the inheritance.
Great. That's okay.
And so if Nora were to pass, the next of kin would be her father would inherit half of the money. And then her uncle, who has been the caretaker of the estate, would receive half of the money and the estate as well. So they now both have motive to try and dispose of Norma.
Right, yes. So Ariadne goes on a little scouting mission, and she is following David and Norma. David's the peacock?
Okay.
Right.
Yes, David.
Sorry, every time we say David, you know, I think David from Murder, She Wrote, and I get confused.
So I just listened to our Taken at the Flood episode, And
God bless.
Yeah, where we keep talking about the character named David in that, and mm-hmm. David from Murder, She Wrote. It's
a very common name.
It turns out, especially in England of all places. So.
Oh, there's only one in my heart.
Mm-hmm. Not yet, of course. Exactly.
David from the Bible.
Mm-hmm. So. So,
not gonna deny it.
Norma and David are like going on some cute little dates and doing some kissing, and you know, she's like, "All right, well, what is this man up to? Does he really like her, or is she in danger?" She's kind of thinking that something might be up with David, because she had also seen him dancing with second girl. And it's like, I just don't know what's going mm-hmm. on there. Ariadne has this is very funny. Ariadne has the waitress at the cafe call Poirot.
Who's named?
Daphne.
Thank you.
So Daphne, the waitress, calls Poirot at the estate of the dad, and he answers the phone and he's like, "Hi, I don't live here." And they're like, "Actually, if you're Poirot, I am looking for you. So, heads up, third girl is in danger."
Mm-hmm. From the peacock.
From the peacock. And so he says, "Okay, thanks." Mm-hmm. And so Ariadne finds David at his studio mm-hmm. with second girl. Who well, is she, yeah. naked.
Well, she gets caught tailing yeah. David yeah. by David.
yes.
And he gives like this menacing monologue, but invites her up and she follows.
Right.
And then, yes, right. we find Francis in the buff in the studio.
Yeah. Oh, and the reason she says, "Oh, I just, in my novels, I have these characters tail people often, and I wanted to see what it was like."
Mm-hmm.
Which is a wild excuse. It's an
absolutely terrible lie.
It's so bad.
She's caught in an embarrassment and does not know what to do.
Love it so much. It's so funny.
But David is painting second girl.
Yeah.
And he's painting her nude.
Yes.
She's very avant-garde, I suppose.
And her reaction, so we want to make her in this episode, is perfect. I mean, her reaction is just, she's very alarmed to see her completely naked, but also at the same time is, you know, trying to compose herself. Oh, goodness. All right. I guess this is what we're doing now. So it's very fun. And then she leaves the studio and gets bonked in the head.
Yes.
And passes out cold. So, she is found, right? She's discovered.
Yes.
She is, but before that happens, we're back at Poirot's office.
Yes, we are.
He's expecting to hear from Ariadne. But instead right. gets a visit from someone.
Norma, who's in hysterics again, and saying, "You must help me, you must help me." And he's like, "Calm down." And she's like, "No, I want to go." And he's like, "No, please stay." And then she wakes up the next morning in his bed, and he's by her side.
Sitting Poirot.
Yeah. Poirot is sitting a socially acceptable distance from her.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Would be more jarred if I just saw Poirot at the end of my bed in a chair.
Yeah.
You know.
It's not like last week where he's looking up ladies' skirts.
No, no. Ugh. Not like
teen that. Teen skirts. Presumed teen skirts. And so she wakes up and is like, "Oh, gosh, what am I doing here?" He's like, "My doctor gave you a sedative. Please stay. You're safer here than anywhere else." And she's like, "Gosh, okay, fine."
Then Georges comes out the door.
Yeah. And the inspector has showed up and is like...
And Ariadne,
yeah. Because I think actually before this, we get the scene with Ariadne having woken up with the police officers. There's some very funny dialogue of like, she's talking about the case with, you know, Peacock and all this. And mm-hmm. it's all very confusing.
That happens after this scene because Poirot's there.
Yes.
Because they keep looking to him. And
okay,
he's,
so
like, very understanding of what she's saying, but it's very nonsensical to like the nurse and the inspector.
Okay, so yeah. Ariadne is not in this scene with the inspector then. It therefore follows. Because she is still knocked out. So right. The inspector shows up, just him. And is like, I got this information for you, just like you asked me to Poirot, but I don't like being lied to. And he's like, what do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes over basically everything we've already discovered about Norma and the fact that she's confessed not only to Poirot, but also to First Girl.
Right.
And... No, Ariadne is in this scene, isn't she?
Regardless of the timeline, basically the inspector says, okay... We do have some results back, and it turns out that there was an asphyxiation of Nanny Seagram before her wrists were cut.
Yeah.
It's really upsetting. And so there was a murder. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it stands to reason that this woman who's confessed to it is probably the murderer.
Twice.
Yeah. Yes.
And Poirot's like, no, you don't understand. Norma comes in and goes, yes, I did it. And then she is promptly arrested and taken away.
Right. Yeah, of course. And Poirot's like, drat.
Yeah.
Really trying to avoid this. And Ariadne at some point, I believe, is discussing this with Poirot. And she says, oh, no, that's terrible. And Poirot says, yes, she would have been much more comfortable here.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't seem overly concerned that, you know, she's going to be convicted for this crime. Yes. But yeah, prison cells, not as great as Poirot's comfy guest room, I guess.
To have a guest room. Right? Not only a bedroom, but a guest room.
My friend moved to Philadelphia and has a guest room.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah. Dang. But yes, so at the time when Ariadne does wake up from her
knock on the head,
from her bonk on the head, from being
being three stooged.
Yeah, basically. She says she's saying things about the peacock and the third girl and blah, blah, blah. And they were like, oh, my gosh, is she OK? And Poirot says something delightful along the lines of, oh, she is always like this.
I assure you, this is what she is always like.
Yeah. She's fine.
It's very good. It's very good. Gosh.
Yeah. And so we get a scene of David coming to the jail to visit Daphne. Norma.
The waitress has shown up at the jail and she's like, oh, would you like some pudding? I'll have some. We got a cup of tea. I came all the way from the cafe. It's a very cute name for a cafe as well. I can't remember what it was.
Mm.
But yeah.
So yeah, Norma. He goes to visit Norma.
What's funny is Norma is the diner owner in Twin Peaks. And so when you say Norma, I think of a cafe. So it's like quite maybe there. That's the thing. Maybe I'm sending you the energy and I'm messing you up.
I know it's happened. Our brains have just been fused and then scrambled together.
Ugh. This is what you come to the pod for. So take it away.
Yeah, and he, what does he do? He shows her some photographs or something? But
look at this photograph.
Basically, he's like, listen, nothing's ever happened between me and second girl.
Oh, yes, because she'd walked in on them being naked and painting.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. Before Ariadne came over?
Yeah.
Something like that. And so he's like, look, I was just drawing her. I have to do that.
Like one of your French girls.
Right. I have to do that sometime because of work. But so it does seem that, you know, he's quite fond of her, though it really also does seem like maybe he has a motive to kill her or to frame her for murder.
Yes.
But who else does?
Everybody.
Literally, yeah.
Literally every single person. But then there's some sort of... David also alludes to some sort of plan with Poirot, right? During this time. Because we're like, we'll get you out of here. Because the next scene is the party, right?
Right, they do get her out of here, out of the jail.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't exactly remember how.
It jump cuts.
Great. That's why.
Yeah. So.
Because then she's free.
Tyler, yeah. you look like we're you have at something.
A daytime party.
Yes.
People are out front. When Norma just strolls up in a dress, looking fly, but troubled.
The ideal look for anyone. Well-dressed and preoccupied.
Sure. Thank you for noticing.
I want to say about this party, they're shooting clay pigeons, and Roderick, who is blind, is attempting to do it anyway, and it's quite charming. Which is also very nerve-wracking. But yes, Tyler, as you were saying, she strolls up.
She goes up to Andrew. He's like, who are you?
Oh, yeah.
Who are you? And he's like, what are you talking about? Calm down. And like trying to save face. And like, she is just really hysterical. The side chick or first girl or whatever her name is.
Yes. That all is correct.
She, like, decides to chime in like she has any business telling Norma what to do.
Yeah.
Norma runs up into the house. Nobody follows her, which I thought was not cool.
Yeah, I agree. People clearly do not.
But then
like this woman.
Francis and side chick again start trying to talk to Norma through the door, and she's like, "Leave me alone! I don't want to be bothered. Like, leave me alone. Go back to your party."
And she has a knife, and she stabs the photo of the painted.
Yeah. She, all of her boyfriend's hard work, she just rips it to shreds.
Yeah.
Like her mom.
Just like her mom.
So, it is announced at this party that Sir Roderick and his secretary, companion?
Sonia.
Have gotten married.
Yes.
Already.
Mm-hmm.
And this is interesting for plot purposes because, you know, marriage, but also because of money, because of inheritance. So, you know, everyone who stands to inherit stuff is mad sus, as the kids say.
I'm sorry. Whenever we say mad sus, at one point, AOC said it, and that's all I can think of on, like, a live stream. When she was discussing the Capitol riot, she was like, that's suspicious. And I was just like, Alexandria, you can't, I mean, you do whatever you want, but my gosh.
She's the youth.
She is the youth.
Yeah, she is. She is. But, yes, so... Our dear Norma is very upset.
Mm-hmm. And she decides to take a bath. Very ominously.
Right. So, unfortunately, Poirot discovers her.
Point of order. Second girl does. She screams.
Right, yes. And then Poirot comes upstairs.
And then Andrew comes upstairs and Poirot says, no, 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 I will take care of this. You go downstairs and keep everyone calm. And then it cuts to an ambulance taking a Norma's body away.
Right, because she is found in the bath, much like her mother was.
Mm-hmm.
And much like Miss Seagram was.
Yes.
So.
This is an example of a serial suicide pact. A concept I've floated around, a serial killer, but also only for suicides. Anyway.
Count Chocula?
Okay, you're going to have to explain that one to me. I'm so sorry.
Oh, Count Chocula is a character from a cereal box.
Oh, I see. Now I have the sad image of Count Chocula, like, with tying a noose to kill him. So why do that to me, Tyler?
Wow. All right. Yeah. I think your own brain did that to you.
Well, yeah, Tyler,
that was not on me. So.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes you have to blame other people for the things you think. It's called being alive.
Projection. Maybe. Yeah. So, and then we get our
parlor reveal,
right?
Yeah. So it's time for a break. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the ad break. And you can go to scavengernetwork.com and check out all the great podcasts, live streams, and other content we have up there. I was going to say they. We're part of the network. We, the network.
We is inclusive of all.
Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of fine stuff over there. I believe they just started a low-key review watch podcast thing about timelines and whatnot.
Okay.
I saw the first episode of Loki. It was pretty good, and I generally don't enjoy the Marvel stuff, so there you go. And Catherine Hahn wasn't even there, so.
I know. I'm amazed that you watched it.
Well, can I tell you why? The rest of my family wanted to, and so I sat there with them.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, the aesthetics are very fun.
Yeah.
I think... I don't want to get it. This shouldn't become Tristan's Loki hour.
But if you want to listen to a Loki review,
head on over to scavengernetwork.com and check out all their fine podcasts. There we got merchandise, mugs, t-shirts, pinback buttons, an old VHS I found in my backyard once. go to teespring.com/themill and, you know, or go to the show notes. You're already looking at your iPhone right now, probably. So, or your Android device. I'd want to be inclusive here. Or perhaps, can I tell you a little baby secret?
Yes, sure.
Okay, my little baby secret is podcasts sound better and are better consumed on a computer. Have you ever played a podcast on a computer? It will change your life.
Mm, I guess it depends on your phone and your computer.
Yeah, I suppose.
Is it now a video game as well?
Podcasting?
Because you're playing it?
Twitch streaming a podcast?
Yeah, people do that.
No, that's true. That is a thing.
Yeah.
I was trying to say something wild, and it turns out that that's an actual real thing. Yeah.
It's like a first-person player. Like, you have to, like, edit... They get people's levels just right.
Podcast emulator. Like Farmville, but for sad nerds.
Well,
which is to say Farmville. But yeah, I like to use my computer, crank the volume when I'm like cleaning or whatever, and when I'm puttering about the home as opposed to like going on a walk. Anyway, enough from me.
So if you want to hear more about our inner thoughts and musings generally about murder mysteries, you can check us out on the Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at ADC Pod. We'll tell you when new episodes come out and maybe share some other things about... whatever.
Yeah. lately, there's been a bunch of Columbo memes floating around Twitter. So if you want Columbo memes, go to...
Yeah, Tristan will find them and retweet them mm-hmm. on our Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So, is there a Taken joke in there? I will find those memes and I will retweet them.
Very specific set of skills.
Yeah.
I will find those memes. And I will retweet them.
There we go.
Yeah,
thank
absolutely.
You.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. There was a joke there.
Oh gosh, I'm so good at comedy. our email address where you can reach mostly Tristan and us if he forwards the email to us is
which happened this week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. AmateurDetectiveClub@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
$1.
Oh, God.
That's all you need. $1 to receive bonus episodes and content on our exclusive House of Patreon.
Ooh.
Visit patreon.com/ADCpod for all your exclusive ADC needs.
Ooh.
I would like to add a little something to that very soothing and sensual ad for our Patreon. Mm-hmm. A lot of the bonus content, it doesn't come out regularly, but there's a swath of like back-ended content. We reviewed in the beginning of quarantine, we reviewed a bunch of Murder, She Wrote, so there's quite a few episodes there, and a bunch of bonus clips as well, just to sort of clarify, because we've all been a little busy lately, so we haven't put out anything mm-hmm. a little bit.
But every once in a while, mm-hmm. Tristan will cut something out, but put it in the bonus content. You yeah. never know when that's going to happen.
Yeah. So if you want to hear us talk about theater and Star Trek and things that aren't Poirot, there you go. There you go. And is as is required of me by the great country of Austria, sure. I am oh, now yeah. bound to say butt soup. As per Rich Gilberto's request.
There you have it.
I'm in hell. Back to the show! So they are all literally in a parlor for this one.
It's great because it's an organic parlor reveal.
In quotes, as if Poirot didn't also, like, know what was going to happen.
Yeah, but everyone was already there. He didn't have to gather them.
That is true, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So it came out a little bit more naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're like, oh no, this is a terrible tragedy.
Rip to a real one. Yeah. Someone pours out a 40.
What's her name? Frances is very sad. Very, very upset upon discovering this body. So,
And it's giving us great Elizabeth Taylor hair.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was noticing her hair was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. She is an actress, by the way. We never mentioned.
Yes.
Right. But yes. So, Poirot reveals. It's a little Columbo-like. It's a little, oh, but one more thing.
I will say this, and I have said it before, I will say it again. Poirot goes, and one more thing, so often in the books as well. I'm mad. I love Columbo, but I'm mad that he stole our boy's thing and claimed before. It's a cultural appropriation.
Uh-huh. Right. So Columbo started in what decade? The 70s?
Yes, and when did Agatha Christie write her book?
The 1770s.
So he goes through the motives for everybody, right?
Yeah. So we go through uncle inherits. We go through dad inherits.
And the dad is not really the dad.
As it turns out.
He's his buddy from South Africa.
So, yes, there was much yelling, you know, not Daphne, but Norma. Norma. Went in and started yelling, "Who are you? Who are you?" And Poirot says, "So I ask you, sir, the same question. Who are you?" And he's like, "Well," he doesn't even try.
No, he doesn't.
He's like, "No, this is fair."
well, you caught me.
Yeah. So well, because
I'm a little stinker like that.
Turns out David had been going through the drawers and finding photographs to help his lady friend out. Because he's like, I don't know, something's weird about this. Maybe he's not the real dad.
Not the daddy.
Exactly right. He is not the daddy.
But in some ways, he is.
Sure. So, so he's like, yeah, no. I knew what's his name? Real Andrew. I knew Real Andrew back in South Africa, but he died. He sucked. We were friends.
No, he does say I was quite fond of him.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, he died by accident.
Right. Yeah. So I assumed his identity because I found out he had lots of money.
Yeah.
And so I came up here recently to be like, hey, what's up? Money, please. And they're like, okay, that's not great. We also find out that Miss Battersby did indeed have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And it was with the real dad, mm-hmm. with Real Andrew. That's why she was away for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So she and Real Andrew had a baby, and guess who it is? We don't have Daphne. To guess because we know. It was Daphne.
It was Daphne, the waitress.
Whole time. No. No, it's Frances, the actress, second girl.
Frances Ford Coppola.
Yes. So Frances had wanted to come and meet her sister, then found out her sister had tons of money. Ching. Yeah, conspired with Andrew, fake Andrew, right?
Yep.
Well, she kind of like
bullied him.
Blackmails him into like being her stooge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So it's her plan all along. He and she devised the plan for killing Miss, what's her name?
Nanny
Seagram. And then tricking Norma into believing that Norma had done that.
By placing one, there were two identical knives, placing one in her drawer where she would find him and be like, well, I don't remember this knife, and then removing it, and then having her find the other knife next to the mutilated corpse.
Yeah. Truly.
Which is also a felony.
Right. I mean, the murder is first of all, and then also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's too many felonies.
So many felonies.
What do I do with all these felonies?
Pick them up.
Yes. So truly gaslighting at its worst.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So when that didn't work, our buddy Frances, second girl, was about to go in and smother Norma to death.
In the exact same way.
Yep. But Poirot figured this all out and made a plan first with Norma. And so Poirot and Norma staged this whole scene.
Mm-hmm.
And he made sure to get to the body so that he could usher her away without her being discovered.
Because Norma then comes through the door and is like, surprise, bitch!
I'm still alive.
Yeah.
Yay!
Here is a picture of Father.
Yeah. And she shows a picture of her father to Frances, and she's like, I don't care. I truly don't care.
Right.
I was in it for the money. Right. I ain't in this for your revolution.
Exactly. She was just acting when she said that she cared about her sister.
And at one point, fake Andrew puts her on blast and goes, oh, Frances, you're not a good actress, but you are very clever. It's very good.
Yeah.
Just confess. And so that's that. And David was trying to help Norma rather than conspiring to, you know, get some money or whatever.
Right.
Truly does love her.
Truly does. And then Ariadne and Poirot are watching the two of them from a window, David and Norma, and she is smiling.
Mm-hmm. And she turns and smiles at Poirot also, and Poirot rolls a tear because he's like, you know, he's like some corny line about like the greatest mystery of all is love or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's really sad. And
yeah, it was the third girl Poirot let get away.
David Suchet was talking about this in the later seasons. Like, we really wanted to add depth to Poirot. And this is one of the things that he has a single life his whole life.
Yeah.
Spoilers. And it's very sad and very sweet. And Ariadne goes, is that a tear? And he goes, no, madame, it is just the breeze. Credits.
What do we think?
It's out of 10 because it's a movie.
Sure.
I would say 8.5 or 9. Really thoroughly enjoyed this one. Picked up all the clues. We forgot to mention there's some letter that Ariadne finds from Nanny McPhee and says, in case I die, send this to the police. But I don't remember what that was about.
She had figured it, like she knew that the father returned, it wasn't actually him.
Yeah, right. Yeah, she was being blackmailed by fake Andrew.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, her rent was paid for and Nanny Seagram was delivered Seagrams on
there it
the
is.
Regular.
There right. it is. I liked this episode quite well. The acting is all very good. It was also very nice seeing Ariadne from the beginning and them having that rapport from the beginning rather than like halfway through the episode or previous episodes that's been kind of like contentious here and there. There's some moments where Poirot is quite rude to her, which I don't appreciate. But, you know, they have a good friendship and that's always great to see. There's a couple side characters like Daphne, the waitress who really shines. All the like smaller roles, everyone does a really good job. Like the two constables that are interviewing Ariadne after a bump on the head, they're quite funny, as is the doorman that at some point they go to, because when Ariadne goes and searches Nanny's apartment, it's already open and this sort of thing.
Right, because she found the letter in the back of her mirror.
In the back of her mirror, and Francis was there the whole time. No, sorry, Andrew was there the whole time and was able to phone Francis to bonk her on the head. But that character, the
doorman.
Doorman, yeah, was very fun, very well performed as well. All the characters were very, very solid. All the acting was very, very good. They put that filter on again, so I'm like, okay, so it's a choice to make it look like it's an older, as Tyler suggested a couple episodes ago. I'm like, okay, great. Now that I know why, I'm on board. It made me cry. The ending made me cry because it was very sweet and very sad, and I really feel for Poirot. I really like how... I mean, he's the titular character, but they've been really giving him a lot to do, more than just solving mysteries lately, and I very much appreciate that. And it really gets you to showcase how good Suchet is as an actor. And I just really fully enjoyed that. And as far as like the mystery goes, I was picking up the clues, but I still wasn't sure who by the end. I was like, okay, the minute... I'll say they did very good casting. They did very good casting because the minute I saw second and third girl, I'm like, oh, they're sisters. Mm. Like, they look remarkably similar. So I figured that one out, and I figured out that Andrew was lying. But I was like, to what end? How is it? So that was quite fun. And I also knew that this is very gruesome, so you can, you know, scrub 15 seconds ahead if you want. I also knew that the murders were fake because you don't slit wrists that way if you want to die. You just don't. So I was like, someone didn't know what they were doing. So it was like, I got all the clues, but I didn't know who. So it was very satisfying on that end as well.
Yeah.
And I wasn't thinking about like the cinematography or anything. So the story was engaging.
It was a 5 for me. It was a pretty serviceable episode. I figured it out. Not early on, but certainly before the reveal. Which was fine. Like, it still, like, was fine enough for me, like, to finish. Like, I didn't, you know, need them to wrap it up when I, you know. Yeah, it was fine.
I also quite liked it. I would also give it probably an 8.5. I had a similar praise as Tristan. I actually thought I was very suspicious of David the whole time, but then it started to become clearer and clearer that it wasn't him. So it kept me guessing, but I was following what was going on. Really love it when I am not so confused that I have no idea where I am and what episode I'm in, basically.
Yeah.
Like Taken at the Flood, for example. I thought the acting was great. Really engaging rapport between Ariadne and Poirot. So good stuff.
Mm-hmm. And again, I'm a sucker. If it starts with that original theme, you know it's going to be a banger. You know, you know. All right. Unless there's any other business.
We should probably.
Tell us what's next.
Yeah, my phone's all the way on the other side of the room.
This is from the IMDb. It's season 11, episode 4, Appointment with Death.
Oh.
Syria, 1937. While accompanying her husband on an archaeological dig, the abusive and overbearing Lady Boynton is found stabbed to death, starring our boy, Timothy Curry.
Ooh.
So we're getting Tim Curry, which I'm very excited by.
I am excited by that as well.
I now call this meeting of the Amateur Detective Club to a close.
Gavel sound.
Boom.
The Scavengers Network.
Creator driven,
community focused,
treasured content.